Hi, my name is Annalise Schirmer. I am 16 years old, and today is May 19th, 2019, and I am speaking with Renee Schirmer, who is my mother. We are recording this interview in Broomfield, Colorado. Yeah. So I'm going to start with a little, like, just intro questions, I guess, just broad about, like, your childhood and stuff. So where do you grow up? Where did you grow up? And, what do you remember most about your childhood?
I grew up in, let me silence my phone. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, mostly Naperville, but we moved around a little bit and then went to college in southern Indiana. I don't have a lot of memories from my childhood, which I've always wondered about what that's about. This is weird, isn't it? I grew up in a middle-class family. Starting out, I was the first child of four girls, and my family was somewhat working class when we started out. Maybe lower middle class, not really working class, that's not fair, although my dad grew up very solidly working class, so he was really motivated to move up in the world. But so when I was little, we didn't have very much money, but then gradually as I got older, my parents began to amass wealth. So my childhood experiences changed throughout. It's not like it was all the same thing. And one of the things that was really important about my childhood was that I had a horse, because I had a very sort of a emotionally distant family, and I'm a really sensitive, emotional person. And so the only, really all my memories are at the barn, you know, in adolescence. I started riding when I was 11. And so the stuff around family, I really just remember holidays, when the extended family would get together. That was fun. But on a day-to-day basis, my family was super boring and a little bit harsh, because both my parents were alcoholic and my dad was a workaholic. So it was just kind of cold, and, you know, I wasn't abused or anything, and I always had food to eat, a roof over my head, I always had clothes to wear. So I always felt like there was just something wrong with me, because it seemed like everything was fine.
Yeah.
That's kind of the summary.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I mean, I knew a little bit, but...
Yeah.
How much did you know about your family's background, like their, like, immigration or stuff like that, and how might have that affected your view of yourself and your family?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't know really anything about my family's background. I just thought, you know, we're American, air quotes. Like, but I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't know where they came from, and... Just recently in grad school, as part of my program, we had to do research around my family's background, and it was so illuminating about where they came from and why they are the way they are. And I think that would have been really, that's one of the things I miss from my childhood that some of my friends have, is knowing their heritage and having a family that really embraces being Italian or Mexican or whatever it is. But I was just like this sort of this American bland, what does that even mean? We do 4th of July sort of thing. It just felt boring.
Did you like want to know more about that?
It never occurred to me. I didn't think there was anything to know.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like, I mean, because I knew both of my parents' families, and they just seemed American and boring. So it's like, well, that's what it is. I'm just in a boring family. I'm a boring person in a boring family. Actually, my dad's family was not boring. They were pretty colorful, because they were the working class family, and they were a lot of fun. They were a lot of fun. But Graham's family was super sweet, but really boring.
So what was your education like? Like, were you in public school and mm-hmm. stuff like that?
Yeah, I just went, I went all the way through to public school, and, it was also boring. Like, we never had, like, AP or IB or any accelerated things for the smart kids. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember getting choices or being told I was smart. Like, I discovered much later in life that I'm really smart. Like, I'm pretty capable, you know? And I always did well in school. Like, in college, I was, like, stoned most of the time and got straight A's. Like, but I was just never challenged. I didn't care about it. And it was not valued. Like, being intelligent wasn't valued like we value it, especially at Peak to Peak. But, like, that culture of really finding, like, what is your gifting? What are you good at? What do you enjoy? Nobody ever asked me. And so I always wanted to do the veterinary thing just because of my attachment to animals. But, yeah, so it was a public school and very white. Just very, I don't know, what was the other question around that? Does that pretty much answer it? Just a white public school, very mediocre. The Redskins, very, you know, culturally not woke. I don't know if they've changed that. Yeah.
Yeah. What was your motivation to go to school and college and, like, do well? And, like, where did that come from, you think?
I think a lot of it was fear. I, to my dad's credit, and I guess my mom too, but I remember it coming from my dad, I always was going to go to college. Like, that was just a family value. Like, everybody's going to college. Because my dad had to work so hard to get to college. He went into the Army and then came out and went to college on the GI Bill, and he had opportunities that the rest of his friends in Gary, Indiana didn't have, and so he saw education as the ticket out. Like, my dad, as you well know, highly, highly valued education. And so I always knew I was going to college, but I was always scared of my dad. He was so intimidating, and I didn't have any warm, fuzzy relationship with him. I just mostly was trying to keep from getting in trouble. And so the way I kept out of trouble was to keep my grades up. And if my grades were up, then he stayed off my back, pretty much. And I really wasn't motivated. Like, I didn't go to college thinking I'm gonna be a this. I wanted to be a veterinarian, but he wanted me to go to business school, so I went to business school. So I didn't really care. But then more recently, as you know, I went back to grad school for what I was passionate about, you know, to be a therapist. So that was a totally different experience because I was totally into all the classes. It was fascinating. I read the material outside of class. You know, I've graduated, but I'm still reading the material. So it's a totally different way of engaging with education.
Yeah, I can see that. And what were your biggest memories from school? Like, did you like it or did you have things that happened?
I liked it. I liked the learning part. I didn't like the social part of it at all because I was kind of I'm introverted and I didn't have any self-confidence, and I didn't like the social part until I was a sophomore. I started hanging out with the freaks in the smoking section, and so then I had my group. And so then it was better, but that's because I was using drugs and alcohol and cigarettes and sex to belong. And so same thing at college, a lot of partying to belong. That was really why I did it, because I didn't know how to make friends without having that in common. Like, I can be your party buddy, but I don't know actually how to relate to you individually. So there wasn't a lot of passion for anything. Like, it wasn't like I loved school or hated school. It was like, it was okay, but that was the part. I always liked learning stuff and reading. I've always loved reading.
That's cool. Yeah.
What
do you think is the biggest difference between your high school experience and high school now?
Yeah, I'm sure this varies so much, but where I was in the Midwest, it was like a mediocre education was okay. Like, nobody was striving for excellence. And then when you go to college, like, we didn't have the internet or anything, so selecting a college was kind of like, what colleges do you know about? I mean, we'd go to the library and they'd have big catalogs, and you'd flip through it, and it was mind-numbing. And so I went to the college that my parents went to. So I think one of the big things is there's more emphasis on perfection, but also not perfection so much, but like really customizing it to kids. It was very one size fits all in the 70s, very much. And now it's much more customized, which is so great. But also there's like exponentially more to know.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. Like we couldn't know it all in the 70s. I remember hearing something about, there was some point in history where it became impossible to know it all, you know, and it wasn't that long ago, because if you think about it, like how life didn't change very much century to century until about 1900. And then, you know, things just went nuts.
Yeah.
And, you know, technology primarily, but so I think that's the biggest thing, and just the whole screen revolution, just the whole millennial thing is just so foreign to what we engaged with in the 70s. Just everything about technology, that's definitely the biggest thing.
Yeah, for sure. So with developments of music and communities around it, groups formed with like disco or rock, and were you a part of this, and what did they mean to you?
And what is what?
What did it mean to you?
Oh my gosh. Rock and roll was my identity. I was totally anti-disco. Thought it was the worst. And it was the soundtrack of my life. I mean, it was really, rock and roll was really, it still is. Mm-hmm. You know that about me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally part of my identity.
How did it like change like your experience with high school or like with yourself, you know, because it's kind of.
Yeah, I think that started to help me to be able to understand myself a little bit, like lyrics of songs that I would connect to, and you know, I started to maybe feel my inner world a little bit more, or be able to put words to what I was feeling, whereas it was so hard because nobody talked to me about emotions or about identity or any of that stuff, but the music did.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it was kind of like the horses and the music in many ways parented me. Like I figured out who I was with horses and Elton John.
That's cute, kind of.
I know, right?
What did others or like adults think of that community and of you because of it?
Oh, of the rock and roll community?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was. They hated it, which made it even better.
Yeah.
They really, really did not understand Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin was hard for them. Which made me love it all the more, because I just wanted to reject whatever it was they stood for. I wasn't interested. I wasn't sure what else I was going to do, but I didn't really want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that. So during like the hippie movements of like the 70s and 80s, you were a little too young to participate in that, but did you want to?
Yes. I've always wanted to be a hippie. deadhead or whatever. I still feel like it. I consider myself an aging hippie, but I didn't get to do it the first time around.
Yeah. How did that work with your rock and roll thing? 'Cause it seems different to me, but.
What do you mean?
Like. To me, it seems like rock and roll and the hippie thing are, like, two separate groups.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe that's
well, just back then, they were not.
Oh, really?
They were not.
Oh.
Yeah, no, not at all. Because, like, you know, Woodstock, for example.
Oh, yeah.
So Woodstock was all the earlier hippie music, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Grateful Dead. Well, Grateful Dead persisted, and most of those bands persisted into when I was a teenager, but when I was only like 10 years old, they were, you know, I think Woodstock was in like 1969, but the rock movement was very much the same as the hippie movement. But then they did kind of diverge a little bit into the hippie movement became sort of the tree hugger granola movement, and the rock and roll kind of went into metal and Aerosmith, and all that had nothing to do with being a hippie. Mm-hmm. But in the early 70s, it was the same thing.
That's interesting. I never even thought about that. Like they're
They grew up together in the 60s for sure, but I was a kid.
So what was your perspective on that movement and the things that they stood for, like the drug aspect or something like that?
Yeah, well, I loved it. I mean, I thought it was all good, and I kind of bought into the, you know, love the one you're with, just do what makes you feel good, and all of that. I mean, I have a different perspective on it today. I think it's really childish, but I think it was an important awakening. I really think the Age of Aquarius is a real thing. Like, it, from a philosophical standpoint, the hippie movement, and the aging hippies, the baby boomers, of which I'm the tail end of, like, I think that there is a change in consciousness that's going to, it's either going to save the world or we're not going to make it. Because I think it's about our consciousness, and I think the whole hippie movement was the beginning of that. And it was immature, it was. But there was something really good in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was very anti-establishment, right? Anti-capitalism,
yeah.
Anti-polluting, and anti-corporate. And I think all of that was really good, because there's a lot of evil in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were deciding what you wanted to do, like your career and stuff, what aspects of your culture impacted that decision?
Yeah, I was overly influenced by my family for way too long. I remember when I was in college, I had given money to Greenpeace, and are they still around? Do you know what Greenpeace is?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't give money to them anymore, sadly. But I had gotten personal checks, you know, bank checks with Greenpeace. Had a little whale on it and stuff, Greenpeace and everything. And when I gave one of those checks to my parents, I owed them some money or something, gave them a check. I mean, they gave me such a hard time about supporting Greenpeace. And I'll never forget that. I mean, in retrospect, I realized that I rolled over. Like, I acquiesced. You know, they were very conservative in every way. And that's one of those forks in the road where I wish I'd have held my ground.
Mm-hmm.
They put pressure on me to conform, and I did. Like, I stopped giving money to Greenpeace, and there was always like this tension. It's not like I completely acquiesced, but I didn't just, like, I'd have gone whole hog into being a bleeding heart liberal. I really would have. But I let my parents, so I think that's the culture that influenced me the most, was my parents. And then as far as, so I,
sorry.
Well, I say that because I chose business. I actually got a business degree and then worked as a business person, you know, for Xerox. And I had some other jobs before that, but Xerox was my big job that was really good. Now, what the hell was I doing? Like, I was just, that was all culture, which 80% of it was my parents. But yeah, okay, we're going to get a job, we're going to make lots of money, we're going to buy a house. Although, I was never going to have kids. That wasn't the plan at the time, right after I graduated from college. But I think that part of the reason I ended up having 8 kids was because I was dissatisfied with this lifestyle, and I wanted something with heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're in your late 20s, it's really common to be like, hey, I think I might want a baby. So I went that route.
And how much choice did you think that you had in that?
Oh, I thought I completely had choice. I thought it was all, yeah, and in retrospect, I think I had very little choice.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of things influencing why I chose what I chose. Which,
yeah.
I will not get into today.
And how do you think that this choice changed the course of your life? Was that for better or worse?
Well, for whatever reasons that I was, you know, when I started having kids, I was really questioning, what am I doing? What's my life? You know, I started out in business, and then we moved to Georgia, and I was working at an animal hospital, wanted to be a vet. But there was this is culturally important, that I did not get support around my desire to be a vet. I wanted to be an equine vet, very male dominated. And it was sort of, I felt like the experiences I had sort of summed up to the men patting me on the head and saying, you're not strong enough to be a vet, honey. Which is so dumb because it has nothing to do with strength. But anyway, and I'm pretty strong. Anyway. but so I didn't have like a path. I didn't know who I was. And so it's like the motherhood path is the easy, it's the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
And there was definitely something in me that wanted children. But that's why, I mean, like there was a lack of awareness of what the different motivating factors were.
Mm-hmm.
At the time. So it definitely turned out for better. I'm so glad that I had eight children. I mean, this is amazing. There was some reasons that I had so many children that weren't so healthy psychologically, you know, to fulfill my own needs, you know, to create this family that everybody will admire, and won't they admire me? I mean, that's all kind of icky, but it definitely turned out for good.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful it turned out the way it did.
So since you grew up in the thick of the Cold War, how did this impact your views on like on family values and on communism?
Yeah, I think the views on communism particularly persist today. Like you can't talk to anybody about socialism or democratic socialism without them completely putting up a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way we were, you know, during McCarthyism, and I was a little young for McCarthyism, but certainly the Cold War, we were afraid that we were gonna, the only thing keeping us safe was, you know, the fear of mutual destruction. That felt like a very thin protection.
Yeah.
Like, I hope the Russians don't, you know, maybe they want to do a kamikaze thing here because I don't, you know, so it was scary.
Oh, yeah.
And so I feel like the government sort of held us hostage because we didn't have all the information. And, you know, we just thought that we could go to war at any time. And then with Vietnam, it felt like that was a powder keg. It could blow up any time. So it was a scary time politically. Yeah. And I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
I really didn't understand. But my best understanding was surface at best. And... in terms of family values, I don't know how the Cold War, I can't think of a way that affected family values.
Yeah, I mean, like, did you feel any, like, pressure to conform so that people didn't think you were a communist?
Oh, no, I never felt it that way. Well, I was pretty conservative. If I probably would have felt it if I would have followed my liberal leanings.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
So, recently we went on a trip to China. Did this impact your views on communism at all?
Yeah. Well, it kind of confirmed my views on communism because I found it to be a very restrictive place, almost like you can't inhale. It's like they're holding their breath over there.
Hmm.
Is sort of how it felt to me.
Yeah.
And just really appreciated our freedom of speech and very oppressive, to be sure. And you know, they were trying to put their best foot forward, of course, and we were in one of the richest provinces in China.
Yeah.
But it all felt counterfeit in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people were so nice to us, and, like, the guides we had were so nice, but there was something not right about it. You know, and just talking to them, like, that one guide, and they're like, oh, you know, how do you feel about having your internet censored? Oh, it's no problem. We get all the information we need. And I'm like, but you can't see things like what happened in Tiananmen Square. Wouldn't you like to see that? And he goes, nobody can see that. And I said, yes, I can. I saw it on the internet when it happened. He's like, you did? I mean, stuff like that that kind of breaks through where they're like, it's great. I don't mind the one-child policy and all that, you know? And you're like, okay. Like they've been brainwashed to believe it's okay. And, you know, interestingly, I think, to be fair, you know, Melissa was there for a year. I think she's brainwashed to believe that capitalism is fair or is good. And so she agrees. We've talked about this. So when you have a communist and a capitalist talking, you have to wonder what's the propaganda that's getting in the way.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that either one has an objective view of what their government is doing because we don't have all the information.
Right.
So it's really interesting that way.
Yeah.
For sure.
So how much did you hear about what was going on during the Cold War? Like, how much, and how much of a bias was in the news that you got?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't very politically active. I don't know. That's not a good question for me.
Okay. And how did it affect your day-to-day, like, in school or whatever?
Not at all.
Okay. What was your experience with the space race?
Oh, I thought that was super cool. They landed on the moon on my 10th birthday, as Annalise has heard a million times. That was pretty cool. It didn't really affect my everyday life. I just thought it was cool.
Cool. Yeah. So, like, since that has, like, a personal connection to you for your birthday and stuff, what was, like, your emotional response to it? Like, did it make you feel, like, more patriotic or, like, I don't know, any...
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I don't have any recollection. I've never considered myself a super patriotic person.
Mm-hmm.
But it did... It sort of made me more connected to the universe. You know, like, it seemed... Instead of just stars, like, wow, we could get up there. Like, what else is out there? And, like, it made it... Made me consider what might be out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was cool. So, for the Vietnam War, how much did you hear about it? And what did you think about what you heard?
Heard about it all the time. It's all that was on TV.
Oh, really?
It's all they talked about. And I had a POW MIA bracelet. I don't know if you ever heard of those.
Yeah.
And sadly, I don't remember what happened to it. I don't think that the guy on my bracelet ever came home. It was an MIA. And I wore that for a long time. And there were times when I was asked to take it off and I wouldn't. They were not high stakes moments, but you know, like a fancy dinner where my mom's like, that thing looks terrible. I'm like, I don't care until my MIA comes home. You know, but it made me feel connected, and we didn't realize what a shit show it was. I mean, I was young too. But so knowing what I know now, colors how I remember it. But at the time, we just thought that we were... I mean, I knew there were war protests, of course, but I didn't really understand what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted the young men to come home. I didn't like that they were... That's me. That's how I am. Like, I'm not so into the political thing, but surely there's something better we can do than sending all our 20-year-old guys over there. That sucks. Like, get them back here. I don't know what's happening over there, but this is shitty.
Yeah. Did you know anyone personally who was over there?
I did not.
That's, I mean, most people, I've just heard that, like, everyone knew someone, you know?
Well, I do now. I have a good friend who was a Vietnam vet, but I didn't meet him until recently.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody.
That's interesting. Yeah.
It's mostly because I was young. Because most of the veterans were older, and or the soldiers... I don't think my parents knew anyone either.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
That's, I don't know.
That is kind of curious. I never thought about that because it was a draft, so it would have affected everybody.
Do you think it would have changed how you thought about it if you did?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
So the protests that were happening, how much did you hear about those?
A good bit. I remember, you know, it's hard to know if it's just that I know about them now or if I knew about them then, frankly.
Yeah.
I knew they were happening, but again, they were all older than me.
Right.
And I was still a teenager, mm-hmm. so I didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
And my parents were not protesters. They supported the government. My parents are a little bit war hawky. So, yeah, I don't know.
What about something like the Kent State Massacre? Did you hear about that?
I did not. I don't remember knowing about that.
Really?
Yeah. That's, because when I found out about it or read about it historically, I was like, where was I?
Yeah. So you were like a teenager while this was happening.
Yeah.
Did you still like want to participate in it at all? Like from what you did here?
No, it felt distant to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't have the desire to be politically active in high school.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. how much did you trust your presidents when you first, like, were becoming politically aware, at least a little bit?
Yeah, I trusted them a lot. I'm trying to think who the first one that I would have actually known was. I remember when probably Johnson was the first one that I actually knew who the president was. I don't know what year that was, but yeah, I remember just having faith that it would, yeah, that our presidents were good.
Yeah. And how did the Watergate scandal change that for you?
Yeah, that really did change it, because I remember writing a paper about Watergate in high school. And I really got into it, the whole Woodward Bernstein thing and Deep Throat. That was the name of the informant, was Deep Throat. I just thought it was super cool. It was kind of a detective thriller to me. I was like, oh my God, this goes on in government. Are you kidding me? And Nixon was not a likable president at all. Like, yeah. He was just not. Yeah, he had no charisma whatsoever, and so I'd say that changed things for sure.
Yeah. So what kinds of things did you hear from others about this, and how did it change your perspective?
Back when I was a teenager, about that?
Yeah, or like, did your parents say a lot about it or anything?
I just don't remember.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. I don't think I can speak to that. I'm sure I was influenced by my family. That's just a given. But I don't remember what they thought.
Yeah. Johnson had a whole thing for the war on poverty. Were you aware of that? And what was your perspective on it?
I was not aware of that. But I can be sure, because I know how my parents still feel about the war on poverty. They were against it and didn't want to spend money on it and felt like it was a waste of money and all that, so I'm sure I was influenced by that. No question.
Yeah. Were you or someone else you knew, like, affected by it, like, helped by the programs or anything like that?
No.
Cool.
So yeah, that's quick. Well, that's because I was in an upper, I was the middle class.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't in the classes that it was designed to help.
Do you think that since your dad came from, like, a lower class, like, how did that affect his view on that?
Yeah, you'd think that that would give him some compassion for people stuck in poverty.
Yeah.
But no. Not at all, because he pulled himself up by his bootstraps and he expected everybody else to do the same.
Yeah.
He didn't think anybody should get a handout. And so he lacked compassion for people that had a harder time or didn't have the advantages he had.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was all against taxes and all against helping the poor, and very rigidly so.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So what was your relationship with money, and how did this change with your family?
I was always given whatever I needed and many of the things I wanted. And, like, I had a horse, and I was given two cars. Like, when I graduated high school, I got a car. When I graduated college, I got a car. Or nice cars, like new cars.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I was very, I was taken care of like a kind of a rich kid. Even though my parents weren't uber rich at that time. But by the time I graduated college, my dad had hit it big. He had the bucks by the time I graduated college. And so I'm kind of spoiled. That affected me because I never really had to fear for paying rent or, you know, food or whatever. And so I have a very privileged perspective on money, and throughout my life my parents have continued to give me money that has helped me to maintain a lifestyle that's nicer than I could have afforded otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's your perspective on money now, and how did that change?
Yeah, I am trying to change my entitlement, my sort of just in me, like that I'm entitled. And so I'm trying to understand what it would mean to live on less and to work for people that aren't as privileged as me, like to, in specific, to be a therapist for people who can't afford therapists, particularly the marginalized populations that have historically not been able to afford something like mental health care, which should be more accessible, but it's not. So the people of color community, the LGBTQ community, basically anyone who's not a straight white male, mm-hmm. cisgender male, all of the rest, like, they've been oppressed, and they have not had the opportunity to make the kind of money that cis white males have been able to historically. So I'm trying to, and I think it's also a social justice thing to give money to, and I have in the past given money to particularly people of color that have become friends that need a hand up. And I don't think of it as charity at all. I think that part of social justice needs to be a redistribution of wealth, because white people profited greatly on the backs of people of color, and that wealth should be redistributed.
Yeah, you have a perfect segue. Ah. So, how much did you hear about the civil rights movement that was happening when you were young?
Yeah, very little. I was very ignorant of what was going on with civil rights. I don't know why.
So, did you hear much about MLK or JFK or their assassination?
Really weird. I mean, I just don't remember any. I remember being at school when JFK was assassinated, but it didn't affect me much.
Right.
And I barely knew who MLK was.
Yeah.
Sadly. I was young. I mean, I keep saying that, but truly, I was really young.
Yeah, and that's fair.
I probably wasn't paying attention, but I know, again, the attitudes of my parents, they would have been resistant. I have considered them somewhat racist my whole life. They say things that are very insensitive often, and they're very defensive around race. And so, I mean, I'm sure they respected Martin Luther King. I mean, who didn't? But
right.
I'm sure it wasn't something that they were teaching. That was the thing about my home. They would never be like, oh, this thing happened with Martin Luther King Jr., let's talk about that. That wasn't the way my house was. They never talked to us like that.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about it.
So what kinds of discrimination or segregation did you experience, and what did you think about it?
I wasn't even aware. I was in a real bubble growing up. And my high school was 100% white, and I remember two black girls transferred there at one point, and it was, I feel so sorry for them in retrospect. I can't. They weren't in my class, so it wasn't like I discriminated against them specifically. I think they were either older or younger than me, but I just remember that everybody was like, it was like a spectacle. And then I went to college in Indiana, and the student population was probably half black, which was really, really crazy for me. But I remember being so fascinated by their culture. And the main thing about it was, I was very heavily involved in rock and roll and partying, and I was using a lot of substances at the time. And I would go down in the basement of the dorms. There was a cafeteria that was kind of a 24-hour cafeteria. You go down there and study and get a grilled cheese or whatever. And I would go down there, and they would be in a section of the cafeteria, and they'd have their music cranked up. This is the time of the boombox, right? And they'd have R&B cranked.
Sorry.
Bless you. And I know this is stereotypical, but God's my hand to God. Drinking orange soda and just dancing and having a blast. And I swear to God, there was no substances involved. I never saw them drink or smoke weed or anything. And they had so much fun. I'm like, I want to be in their group. But I was the white girl. Like, that wasn't going to happen. And I'm sure I had a lot of racist attitudes that I couldn't even have identified at the time. But I found it to be a really great way to be introduced to the Black culture because I found it to be so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was jealous of it.
That's interesting. So how much did you know about other civil rights movements, like the LGBT plus movement?
Like, throughout my life?
I mean...
Back then?
Back then, but coming into now, like...
Yeah, like, that's a real recent thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've only been really aware... I mean, I've been aware as an adult, or, you know, I knew... about the various movements, but I didn't understand them, and I was solidly entrenched in my white privilege, so I watched from afar. I was never an ally. I never understood, and I thought they were making too big of a deal. I thought, yeah, we're all, you know, I don't see color, that kind of shit.
Yeah
and of course I thought being queer was a sin until about 15 years ago, so
right.
Or maybe 10 years ago, even. I'm not sure when that shifted entirely.
Yeah. So, I think our time is coming up to the end here. Thank you so much for being able to help me out with this.
Well, thanks for asking. It's very flattering to have someone care.
Yeah. It was really nice to hear about your life and stuff, so. Yeah.
Namaste.
Namaste.